rapid used by hemorrhage amateurs. It was developed during the First World War in 1914 and 18. But it's rarely used now, although an adjustment and enhancement using a low-frequency current is the basis for the latest high-performance induction radio and current hybrids now used in UK and Europe. So we have two directions. One is voice. By the way, last year there was the report from the British National Association of Cave Communication. I'm probably mixing apples and bananas. There was something like the FCC in British, and they found the device that is called cave radio used widely there insufficient in quality for the voice communication. Back to you.
Okay, very good, Wesley.
Okay. I'm gonna adjust up more. Hold on. That's 26. 29.1. Okay. There was the communication done by a very old technique before the Second World War. Hold on. Okay, I'm with you.
N2VH, the Mobile. So go to Victor Hotel, Mobile, Echo Lake, with a comment, and that control.
Sure, Ken. The pleasure to talk to you tonight. We miss you on 10 meters, but we understand.
Okay, hi. It's lovely to hear your voice in my car. In stereo, four-channel stereo. Sound beautiful. You all sound beautiful. I just wanted to squeeze in real quick. I haven't been on HF lately because I had to break the station down up in South Dakota about a couple of months and a half ago. And I got it all down in Alliance, Nebraska now. So the next time you hear me, I will be in the main station, you know, Alliance, Nebraska, only there. So I give it about another week or two before I'll be setting up and going on the air. I do have about half a dozen antennas still up in the air in Alliance. And I'll be re-energizing them in about a week or two. And I'll be trying to get back on the 10-meter net that way. So you will be hearing me. And I will be getting back on, like I said, shortly. So I'm getting ready to do that by retiring, and I'm moving everything down there. And it's been moved. I just have to refit the ham shack in a different location to make it better here in my house. So thank you for your patch you mailed me. It's very beautiful. It's going to be on display in my shrine of collectibles, and I appreciate it. Back to the troll.
You're welcome, Ken, and I look forward to talking to you again on our 10-meter net. I tell you, though, this morning, propagation was awful, absolutely awful. On the entire 10-meter band, I heard one guy who I think came from Puerto Rico, and I could barely hear one or two of his contacts, and then he faded away. And I spoke to the farthest person I spoke to was in Brooklyn. I don't even think I talked to anyone in Queens this morning. That's how bad the propagation was.
Oh, that's good to hear from. I mean, I hate to hear bad news, but I'm not missing. And the other way is like black humor. I'm, in my dark humorous way, I'm not missing out on anything, okay? But I'm just coming back to Rapid City, South Dakota, doing my weekly shopping excursion with the kids. And tuning in to the TechNet here, driving down the highway, and it'll be, my days are numbered up here for what I'm doing, so it's nice to hear you, and it's just about 8:25 here, so I'm just going to keep living on the net. I have no other further comments, except for listening to you guys and stuff. Pure, beautiful entertainment, and your voices are just bouncing around my car very beautifully, so thank you, and thank you for that info on that. And out here in the Pine Ridges Indian Reservation, that's, nothing more to report, except that they have brush fires out on the open range and things like that. But, you know, we have cold nights and warm days, and We're waiting to get maybe another snowstorm or two before summer hits. But more or less, we have like 60 degree weather during the day and 30 degree weather at night. And I'll hand it for my final back to Net Control. Thank you for me in.
AC2GS. Well, you're welcome, Ken. Anytime, 73, and we'll talk to you down the line. Wesley, I think maybe we should wrap this up.
Okay, no problem. The Stewart, good to say that most of the communication from underground the service and back the other way done on single span. And the frequency ranges from 27 kilohertz to 185 kilohertz, the mostly used, but there were a case of communication at 300 hertz. So we say that 50 hertz or 60 hertz is the typical line for our electricity. Okay. Anyhow, thank you very much and have a good night.
Likewise, thank you for participating as always. And now it is time for Paul WS2N with the SpaceNet Report.
Thanks, Roy. AC2GS WS2N for the SpaceNet Report for the SpaceNet. And very good on all the topics tonight. Still want to find out what the fish were doing when Noah's Ark was floating around. Yeah, I guess they didn't have to jump into the boat. There's a deal that was made between NASA and JAXA. JAXA is the Japanese version of NASA, JAXA. And they've agreed to build a pressurized lunar rover, a crewed version for NASA. A lot of countries that are contributing to the Artemis program. But somewhere along the line, most likely 2028, the earliest, we'll have people on the moon. And eventually, they're going to have other lunar rovers on the moon, you know, early on. But somewhere down the line, you know, one of the later versions of that will be a crewed version. And I put two pictures on Roy's website. One, what the crew version would look like, would carry two people, pressurized. And comparing that to an Apollo lunar rover. The picture there shows Irwin looking at the rover on Apollo 15. But big difference between, you know, many, many decades that have gone by of what's going to be going on. I can imagine riding around in a pressurized vehicle on not worrying about the spacesuit. You know, if you crash into something, you better have your spacesuit on ready to go. But, they could ride around in a shirt sleeve environment, theoretically. So somewhere down the road, that day is coming. But, you know, they've already agreed with NASA to do something like this to contribute to the program. You know, at the end of it, of course, NASA will eventually allow a Japanese astronaut to be one of the people to actually land on the moon. Let me drop it.
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. This is Charlie.
Good evening, Charlie. How are you?
Excellent. They say NASA wants three prototypes?
Yes, that's what they're looking for now. But this is a separate deal. They're actually looking for three prototypes from private companies within this country to see what they can come up with. So I've heard that as well. But those will be open air, if you want to call it open air versions. You know, where you'll need a spacesuit to ride around. Back to you, Charlie.
Oh, you mean a convertible?
Yeah, QSL. Yeah. Well, remember the rovers that they had on the moon when they were driving around on Apollo 15, 16, and 17? It was three separate rovers that are now sitting on the moon. And the chairs look like, you know, like beach chairs. And of course, it was electric powered and had a dish on the
on the front of it, which would have transmitted signals actually directly back to Earth. It was an interesting way to do things. And, yeah, I mean, they would just grab. But those days are over. Back to you, Charlie.
Is this going to be an electric vehicle?
Yes, I'm sure all of them will be. You know, then they will someday have the capability of taking, for instance, hydrogen and oxygen to power it, and you have fuel cells on board, for instance. And the fuel cells, again, would power the electric motors, but I'm sure all the electric motors in the future, rovers, will be electric.
That sounds like something I'd like to see.
Well, you can see the outside of it. I mean, I put it on Dr. Roy's website. If you go to roy.ac2gs.com, just put that into the URL, and you'll see a few of my pictures that I put up, and all of Roy's topics that he puts up from week to week. Back to you, Charlie.
Now, this week you had a doubleheader. You had a... two launches on Wednesday and Thursday?
Yeah. That's SpaceX constantly launching. Not only their own satellites, but satellites for other private industries. But nothing that went up to the space station. Not this week, anyway. So yeah, it's actually been relatively quiet as far as the space station is concerned. Ever since Earl O'Hara came back to Kazakhstan on the Soyuz MS-24 Soyuz mission. But now it'll be up there. The ones that are there, we won't hear from them about 4 or 5 months. Then you'll start hearing about a new crew eventually going up and an existing crew eventually coming down. A total of 7 people riding around on the International Space Station right now.
Seems awfully crowded. No wonder why they want 3 rovers.
Understood. Yeah, well, the space station's different. The 3 rovers, they're looking for one that they're going to pick. That's what they're going to do. And maybe down the road they'll pick another one. NASA does believe in redundancy. You know, that's the goes. We're going to wait and see. I want to talk about the Starliner. Starliner mission that's coming up this within a couple of weeks. May 6th. This thing is supposed to be launched a few years ago. It's had some problems. They've redone a lot of valves and all kinds of insulation problems on the inside of the spacecraft. They didn't like the that was covering stuff. They thought maybe it might be a bit of a fire hazard. That's all been replaced and everything. And they have flown it 2 times. One time, well, both times it was supposed to go to the International Space Station. The first time it didn't make it. There was some computer problems and glitches. And the first Starliner eventually came back and landed successfully in New Mexico. You know, on solid ground. White Sands, New Mexico. The second one went up, you know, later on when they had all the bugs out, and sure enough, that one did dock successfully with the International Space Station, stayed there for a couple of weeks. Crews on board went inside, poked around, and made sure everything was okay. And then that spacecraft, again, came back unmanned and landed in the same place in White Sands, New Mexico. Now, this is the next one. Now, they've got all those bugs worked out of it. This is going to be the first crew mission to go. You have astronauts Butch Wilmore. He's been up to space around 3 different times, along with Sonny Williams. Sonny Williams, she's been up to space in the International Space Station as well for 3 times, too. By the way, she's a ham, KD5TLB. So they'll be flying on... May 6th, the scheduled time will be 10:34 at night, so I will definitely watch that. They plan on docking the space station a day or so later. And then they plan on being on the space station for a couple of weeks. The idea is to check this vehicle out 100% and qualify it for its regular flights, which will start probably the end of the year. But the regular flights will consist of four astronauts up to the space station. And just like what SpaceX does that with the Crew Dragon vehicle, Starliner will do the same thing with its with more people as well. And they'll switch on and off. You know, every 6 months, you'll have a flight going up. And, you know, one time it'll be Starliner, the other time it'll be Crew Dragon. And they'll keep doing that until the end of the space station. So we'll see. Talking about Boeing, this thing was built by Boeing, Starliner. Let me drop it. Boeing was built by Starliner, and the rocket that it's going to be launched on, don't forget, this thing is sitting on top of a massive rocket, an Atlas V rocket, which is successfully flown, you know, probably almost 100 times. That rocket consists of two RD-181 engines, which are the old Russian engines, and they consist of two solid fuel boosters that will be attached to it as well, one on port, one on starboard. And then after separation of the two boosters, you'll have the main core will continue until about 2.5 minutes later. That will separate, and that will leave the final stage that will be still attached to the Starliner, and that will bring it to orbit. Let me drop it. One stage separates, and that rocket by the liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen stage, and it'll be carrying two L-10 rockets, which have been flown for decades. They've just been putting them, you know, so it's very reliable. So I'm sure this time it's going to go very well. After that separates, the Starliner and the service module will continue to the space station and dock with it. After a couple of weeks, the crew will come back. The service module will separate from the crew vehicle. Then they use the heat shield, come through the atmosphere. Three parachutes will open up. Well, first they have the drogue parachutes that pulls out the other bigger parachutes. And now come through the atmosphere. They won't need the shield anymore. That'll separate. And then as you get down near to the ground in White Sands, New Mexico, six big airbags come out of the bottom to soften the blow when it hit the ground. That hopefully goes all well. And I can't wait until I see the Starliner take off with the crew on board. Any comments?
Now, that should be due May 6th.
Yes, Charlie, May 6th, and a nighttime launch, you know, Eastern Standard Time, 10:34. You know, unless it delays, you know how Florida is, you know, with the weather and all. Unless, of course, you have a technical delay, but that's the planned launch, nighttime launch. Back to you.
That would be nice to see at night, a nighttime launch. You see the whole rocket go right up into space?
Yeah. I only get to see it from New York. You're down in Florida, right?
Oh, not this week. I live in West Babylon. I was down in Florida last week.
Okay, Charlie, I thought you were saying something about Florida a while back, so I assume maybe you were staying down there. But, you know, of course you have to be somewhere near the coast to see this anyway. But, well, watch it on TV like we always do. That flight will definitely be on TV because it's a brand new rocket. A brand new spacecraft that NASA has built over the years. They've actually had five brand new spacecrafts that have gone up, and this will be the sixth brand new spacecraft. You know, they started, of course, with the Mercury flights. That was, you know, I'm talking about crew flights, of course, three flights. Then we had the Gemini flights. Then we had the Apollo flights, you know, and then you had the the different space shuttles that have gone up. Now you have the Dragon crew vehicle that successfully has gone up, and now you're gonna have the Starliner. So it's gonna be a thrill for the crew. They're both very good spokespeople. Sony Williams, just terrific. If you ever go on to the internet to see what the inside of the space station is like, you bring up Sony Williams' tour of the internet space station. She does a great job when she was up there a few years back. She flies through all the different modules, tells you what everything's for. Very well done. And she's the one that's the ham out of the two. For some reason, Butch, I don't think Butch ever got his ham. Anyway, we're going to move on. WS2F. Okay, there's an interesting mission that astronauts will be doing on the International Space Station later. I believe later this year they're planning on it. They need to fix a telescope that they have up there. And this thing, again, does not look like a regular telescope, but it is an X-ray telescope. It's called the NISA, or the Neutron Star Interior Composition Explorer X-ray telescope. It's got these, like, funk tubes. You know, if you look at a regular telescope, it's just a glass, reach the light back. Well, these are, like, long tubes. The X-rays come down. If it was flat glass, it would just, like, go right through it, you know. So they need to have them, like, they're like long pieces, long tubes in them, inside one of another. I think there's like 30 of them inside this box, and they need to fix it. What happens is, well, this first of all, it's mounted on the outside of the International Space Station, on one of the truss pieces, naturally pointing up. The space station. Yeah, the space station has been down. As it goes around the Earth, there's one part that's always down, one part that's always looking up. So the part that's looking up, that's where this NISA telescope is sitting. So they plan on doing a repair mission. The reason it needs to be repaired, you know, it was working fine, you know, when they put this thing up there. It's like a box, a big white box that sitting on top of one of the truss pieces. And again, if you go to Roy's website, roy.ac2gs, you can see this telescope. You can see the other picture, by the way, of the star line that I was just talking about when it is in space. But the picture I put up for the NISA scope, if you look at the picture, you're looking at the whole International Space Station, and I drew an arrow pointing to the location of where this thing is. So the astronauts will actually have to go out and fly over to the box and do some surgery on it. They have to. The reason that they have light has started to come in, let's call it a light leak. It's not supposed to be there. For some reason, something opened up, maybe due to expansion of and contraction, you know, from being hot or cold. But anyway, there's a little light getting in, fouling up the X-rays, pictures that they get when they look at all the pulsars, and black holes, whatever they're looking at in space. So the surgery that the astronauts was, they're going to put these pieces in, these pie-shaped pieces into the top of the box to see if they could, you know, eliminate the light leak. But it's interesting as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, to me it's, you know, it was not designed to be serviced. You know, it's on the space station, and they expect it to work, you know, virtually forever. You know, nobody ever touching it. But now they've actually figured out, you know, something that they can do. And Maybe they could actually fix this thing. They fixed other telescopes in the past. They fixed the Hubble Space Telescope, you know, a number of times. They've had five different surf missions go up to that, do that. That was a big job. Years before that, they had a mission to fix the solar maximum scope. That was a problem. They repaired that from the space station. Not from the space station, from the shuttle. And then the AMS, they fixed on the space station. AMS was the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer, which we talked about on this net for, I don't know, it seemed like months on end. I know Dick K2RIW was interested in that, that thing. And they did three spacewalks to repair that. It needed to replace, like, very diameter tubes, less than, I think, 3/8 of an inch. Stainless steel tubes they needed to replace. They needed to cut out the old ones and put in new ones. Quite a job. And, you know, I mean, these were tubes that held carbon dioxide. And then they had to pull a vacuum on it, make sure there's a... and then pressure on it, make sure it was okay, and then eventually they put that back into operation. So they've done this kind of thing before, but this will be another one, fixing the NICER X-ray Space Telescope. Any comments or questions? WS Twins.
Yeah, does this telescope see gases?
X-ray telescopes, you know, they look at... you know, I guess the results of maybe gas explosions, you know, the whatever, you know, whenever these, let's say, neutron stars, you know, explode or something, or even black holes, you know, surrounding a black hole, you know, they give off X-rays. So this thing detects X-rays. One of the things they look at are pulsating neutron stars. So, you know, they're able to get a lot of science out of that. But, you know, you can see it in light, you know, what they're looking at, but you can see it in X-ray. There's other X-ray telescopes up there. The Chandra X-ray Space Telescope is in orbit around the Earth for a couple of decades now. And the same type of thing with these long tubes. So the X-ray is, like, kind of like, hit at an angle, and that's the way they capture the pictures. So, you know, we'll see. I want to say something else about NICER, but I forgot what it was. I don't know. I'll think about it later. Any comments?
No. I got to look that one up later.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a relatively small box, but, you know, I think it's only maybe like 2 or 3 feet, you know, long tubes or something like that. So, We'll see. I don't have a time for, you know, for the spacewalk itself. I'm not sure when that will be. Most likely a few months from now, I'm guessing. Because this is the first I've read about it. So we'll see. Any kind of work that the astronauts do on an EVA totally fascinates me. And, you know, they spent thousands of hours outside the International Space Station building that. Every time they hook up a module in the pan, you know, you need to hook up data lines, piping, you know, for cooling, you know, with ammonia in it, power lines that have to be hooked up, all kinds of things. They route everything outside of the International Space Station. This way, the inside of the modules are pretty much kept as clean as possible with, you know, without the idea is to have all this stuff, you know, connecting from module to module to module, 15 modules, making a tubing on the inside. First of all, it would be hazardous for, you know, for some of the tubing, like the ammonia systems. They found out this with Mir. Mir was the Russian space station that survived 15 years, but they did not run anything on the outside of this, that space station. Everything was run on the inside. So when we went up to visit with the Russians, all this is a bad idea. So when we built the International Space Station with all the equipment on the outside, what we'll do is, as we hook the modules up, and if any piping or anything has to be hooked up from module to module, we'll do it on the outside with spacewalks, which worked out really good.
Why need ammonia?
Oh, the ammonia systems? Yeah, that's for cooling. Inside the space station, believe me or not, it gets very hot. It's actually hard to get the heat. Things get actually hot inside the space station, more so than getting cold. even so, and they go around the Earth half the time in sunlight, and the other half is in shadow. And, you know, the idea is to get rid of heat. They have insulated walls. The walls are roughly 3.5 inches thick. And there's, like, very little heat transfer between the inside and the outside. So, actually, it's hot with people inside and all the electronic equipment and stuff that they have, you know, going on the inside of the space station. So you got to get rid of that heat. And they have heat exchangers on the inside. And, you know, which carry it's an ad system. It goes through a heat exchanger near a bunch of tubes with ammonia in it. And those ammonia systems have to get the heat outside of the International Space Station. So you see these big panels that are on the outside of ISS. And they're probably, looks like they're about 25 feet long and, you know, maybe 5 feet wide. There's all a bunch of them and radiate the heat. And little radiated, there's no convection up there, no air. So the ammonia goes through the external panels. Ammonia won't, freeze. So if you had, water or something, you wouldn't be able to, it would freeze on the inside of the pipes. That's why you have an ammonia system that does not freeze. And that's why they use ammonia chilling.
That's interesting. It really, really is.
Understood. Very good. There's also another mission that, I'm running out of time. Maybe I'll cover that next week. But anyway, Bionic developing a reusable rocket that they plan on launching probably in a couple of months. NASA uses sounding rockets. Sounding rockets are really rockets that, they're suborbital rockets. They go up, maybe 180 miles up base, and they'll do some science, and then they come back down and they recover the payload, and they do this on a regular basis. It's called Brandt, I think they're Brandt 9 solid booster, solid engines that they use. And this company, Astrobiotic, is developing a reusable liquid fueled suborbital rocket that they could use and sell. There's a lot of experiments, and this way they'd be able to actually have this thing come back down and land vertically, similar to what Elon Musk does with his Falcon 9 rocket. So, there's a lot of engineering things going on. There are countless companies involved with rocket development. I wanted to bring up that. Astrobiotic is the one that just recently sent a mission to the moon. It didn't work out for them. But they do other things besides just lunar missions. They developed developing these reusable suborbital rockets. Should be interesting when they come online. Oh, they're going to make the news. It's not as flashy as crew going up to the space station or a $10 billion telescope that they put out at the Lagrange Point 1 location. Called the James Webb Space Telescope, but still interesting as far as I'm concerned. Let me drop it. Just want to mention Ingenuity. Ingenuity is the helicopter that has been up on Mars for since February 2020, when the Perseverance rover dropped it off and started making flights. It was supposed to make no more than 5 flights. They were hoping for 5 flights with this helicopter that had these blades that were 4 feet long. Two big blades, one spun counterclockwise, the other one clockwise. Revved up to over 2,000 RPM to accomplish flights on Mars. So they were hoping for 2, 3, maybe 5 out of this. It had cameras on board and all of that. Well, the flights kept going month after month, and then eventually year after year. They almost made 3 years of flights. 72 flights were completed by this little helicopter. And finally, toward the end, one of the blades...
that time complete.
Sheared off. But the helicopter is still sitting upright and still transmitting signals back and forth to the Perseverance rover. So they got some last bit of data to it, and they realized that the rover is going to keep going. And, you know, it's line of sight. They're running like 7-nanometer communications between the rover and the little helicopter. So once it goes over the hill, the signal is going to be gone. But they sent the signal to Ingenuity to leave your instruments on. We want to know about weather, temperature, and stuff. And it, you know, it's got all that on board. And even so, it's not going to be able to transmit it back to the rover anymore. It's going to store all that information, and then eventually, in the future, when somebody picks this rover up, maybe a rover or another maybe a manned mission, all that data will be stored on it. They have enough memory in this tiny rover, enough gigabyte space to store up to 20 years of data, you know, temperature, wind, you know, simple data. And they're going to leave it on, and it, you know, every year Mars goes around similar to Earth, almost 24 hours, a little bit different. I think it's off by about 40 minutes. But it's daytime and night, and every time it's daytime, the solar panels come on, and they charge the batteries, and they think this thing could store enough information lasting up to maybe even 20 years. Fantastic job that little robot did. Anyway, looking at the time, we had the witching hour, about 11 o'clock. Let me tell you that tomorrow is the Club InfoNet. Anybody who wants to check it to that at 8:30, you don't even have to be a member. You can check in on these frequencies. Roy, I'm going to turn it over to you. AC2GS, this has been WS2N for the SpaceNet Report for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, Doug. Very good. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for all that you do for the SpaceNet Report, all that you do for the technical net, and all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. I especially do. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I hope you learned a couple things. I hope you were entertained. And I hope you'll join us next Sunday night when we try and do this all over again. So as always, I will leave you with a couple of words. Dick, may he rest in peace, K2RIW, would often end his technical nets with the advice of be kind to each other. That's always good advice. So please, be kind to your friends, your enemies, your neighbors, your strangers, what have you. Life is too short to be a pain in the backside. Also, like to always mention good old Epictetus. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So please keep an open mind. Try to learn something new every day. Our revels now are done, people. I wish you, those who practice, a Zeus and Pesach. I hope you don't get too contaminated by nonsense and such. And I wish you all a great week. Please come back and join us next Sunday again. And as always, I will be here after I finish this all with the line, Slava Ukraine.
Jesus Christ.
Or
others.
And I'm glad Ukraine is going to get
especially kind
the help that they need.
I think
maybe next week we'll talk about that that series that I saw. And I'm glad to find out, though, there's going to be a second season to the three-body problem.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in those three books. It's a trilogy, and it was so successful that someone decided to make a fourth book, and the author gave his blessing to it. So it's a very long story. It takes place over thousands of years.
Okay, now these eight episodes, what are you saying? That's book one?
not exactly the guys who the showrunners decided to smash them up together. You know how they kind of go back and forward in time? But that doesn't take place in the book. In the book, time kind of goes in a serial manner.
Okay, probably similar to Channel 13. PBS had a version of that. You know, it's an actual movie, you know, but it looks like it actually came out of China, so it's, you know, they're all, you know, it's all, yeah, you know, I have to read the whole thing, but I wasn't through that. But this thing was the replica, you know, I mean, this is a regular epic movie, and they used every possible law of physics to accomplish, you know, the idea of, you know, everything being very believable. Very well done.
Well, I'm glad you were able to follow it. They kind of bent a lot of laws of physics. You can't amplify a signal by pointing it at the sun. They had that Saffron that was a supercomputer made from a neutron that was expanded in 11 dimensions. And it went on and on like that. So it was interesting. It was kind of, it was pseudo hard science, a lot of it. It was fun.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. The big proton, I saw that. You know, but I mean, they took every theory that you could possibly have. You know, I just want to see where this guy winds up. He was supposed to be heading, you know, heading to the where the aliens were coming from, and he got off the nanotechnology that didn't work out. Something broke or something. Wound up going off course. And they think he's going to wind up orbiting the Milky Way or something. He's finished.
Well, I don't want to ruin it for you, but I think you'll enjoy the part that he plays in the future of the book or the series.
Yeah, I figured they had to bring him back. Yeah, really good show. All right, Roy, I'll let you go. Have a good, happy Passover. Take care, guys, and we'll catch you next week. WS2, I'm clear.
Thank you, 70. I am clear.
I'm 73, and I'm clear.
Book the Hatch Ravens for today because of the advent of AI and possibly the birth or the origination of machine sentience is iRobot by Isaac Asimov. I recommend everyone reads it. I'm probably preaching to the choir here. All of you have probably read it.
HC2GS, WB2BXO, you're still around?
Yeah, I'm still here, Frank.
Okay, I just think you'd get a kick out of this. I was looking to work the Zero Yankee Alpha, one of the DX expeditions to Easter Island, which not actually super rare DX, but I still wanted to catch up with them on a couple of bands. Using online Flex Radio, there was somebody covering them up on 12 meter CW. So I put the CW filter in the narrowest setting, which I guess is 100, or maybe narrower. It didn't even look. I just like moved the slider, the narrowest setting, and the guy sounded like not only did the QRM, but most of the HF noise level disappear. The guy sounded like he was sitting in my shack using an audio audio. Absolutely. Amazing.
Ah, that's wonderful. That's great. Yeah, I mean, the beauty, obviously, the beauty of CW is that the bandwidth it requires is dependent upon the rate of your transmission. So it can have a very, very high bandwidth and has an incredibly good efficiency that way.
Yes, it's easy.
Say again?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good. Are you the one talking earlier about Starliner?
I'm not quite sure. What are you alluding to?
The Starliner, someone was talking about, like, launching two and all sorts of stuff about that. Was that you?
I don't think so. I mean, we were talking about Boeing.
Yeah, there was a new spacecraft.
Oh, that might have been Paul. Paul was doing the SpaceNet report. So maybe that's what you're talking about. I do the earlier segment, basically just kind of questions and topics and such.
Okay, I didn't like what you were talking about that. I thought you were having the same.
Okay, I think mine's a little bit higher pitched, but okay. I think he left the repeater just a few minutes ago.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'll say that you were saying how you can't see in here, but I have seen the fusion launches before from New York. If you know, if it's at the right time, which if it's a night launch and also going to the ISS, the inclination will be pretty high. You should be able to see us if you're lucky.
Oh, okay. If you want to, Paul will be back here next Sunday night. He does SpaceNet report approximately from about 10:20, 10:05 till about 11 o'clock.
Okay, you're
in a week then. Okay, very good. I'll be clear once again. This is AC2G.
All right,
73,
this is KO6UGG. 73, Roy. WB2BX, 73, Frank. Have a good week. Be well, and we'll talk down the line.
Yeah, and Azizan Pesach, I think, was the correct expression. To you and anyone else who celebrate. Night, WB2BX.
Yep, that's the phrase. Thank you very much. Everyone, be well, stay safe. This is AC2GS. I think it's for the fifth time. But this is for the final time for tonight. I'm clear.
Good night. Don't sound anything like pop.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. That tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Skymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30 is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:00. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Thank you. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
W2K2BW2BSM.
Tonight at 80. This is U2VL repeater.
Today.
We're playing a little ham radio and need a little help from Luke, but he's not around.
I heard him on before. He was looking for Richie, but there was no Richie. KD2KX.
Hey, left him a voicemail message. He got the mechanical part of the link for 00 hooked up to go on to IRLP on 6 meters. I just gotta get some help with him as far as the configuration.
Okay, easy for you to say.
Well, it's because you said it. So what you up to?
All right, got 4 service calls. We drive around the neighborhood.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see they're actually destroying the Parkway roadway so they could repave it.
But I don't understand in today's technology, they don't have a machine that can actually grind up the asphalt, heat it up, and put it back down.
Yeah, I know, but nobody makes money that way. Oh, it's like getting a massage driving on this.
Traveling on the rough road.
I'm willing to bet odds. I got on.